Good morning. Happy Saturday morning on the last weekend, knock on wood. That's right, I'm Irish, no jinxing. We have just a couple of days left of session is my point, Senator Abler. Anyhow, I'm calling the conference committee together for Senate File 1384, House File 1522. It is Saturday, May the 20th, 2023. We're in room G3 of the state's beautiful, beautiful capital. It is 9:17 in the morning. And members, we have a quorum. We are here this morning to finish the last of the work on the conference report, keeping the nurses at the bedside. And I want to just open by talking a little bit about this room and this work. And we have then an amendment that is the result of a lot of intense work over this entire session, but in these last few days. So we're going to do that work, and I don't think the work itself is probably going to take us all that long. We had a hearing here a couple of days ago. You can feel the tension on this issue in this room, and I just want to acknowledge that. Because I've heard from members and others about the tension in the room, and it's real. And I think that is in part because this is an important piece of legislation and making sure that we are positioning, if you will, our nurses in our hospitals to do the very best job that they can do together, which has always been the intention of this legislation, is to make sure that the people who are getting care in our hospitals are getting the best benefit of the expertise of the participants, those who are responsible for the hospital and those who are responsible for the care of the patients inside that hospital. That's always been the intention and the goal. And I think as you hear about the changes in this amendment that we're going to move and then its intention in the bill altogether, you will see that I think we have found the right balance. And I want to give a lot of credit to a number of people, of course, Representative Feist, Representative Abler, Senator Abler, Senator Bolden, Representative Berg, Representative Davids, but really so many people that are in this room and not in this room who have contributed to either with their fierce opposition or their strong support to make what is before us a proposal that I hope stands the test, that is durable and achieves the goal that is, at least for me, stated, that we are retaining our nurses in the care of patients in our hospitals, and that the people who are getting their care in our hospitals are getting the very best care that we can deliver together. That's the goal. And so with that, I would like us to move straight to, we have the A21 before us, which was the amendment that is the base of our work, and we have now to offer to that the A26 amendment, and Representative Feist is offering the A26 amendment, and I'm going to turn to Council, Liam Monahan, to walk us through the amendment.
Madam Chair, I thought I got to offer the A26.
Oh, thank you. Senator Abler, you're right. Senator Abler is going to move the A26, and if it's all right, we'll have Mr. Monahan walk us through it, and then if you'd like to speak to it.
Yeah, that'd be great, and I just wanted to offer a comment.
All right.
And I'm actually glad we're to this point, and it's high time. And, you know, I think as we get into something as meaningful as this, it's important to recognize, you know, the value of, like, there's more than two parties, but just if we oversimplify, there's two parties. We have a health system that is challenged as never been before. We have staff who have felt challenged as never before. We've had the institutions who felt challenged as never before. And sometimes that makes people withdraw to their corners and to like, oh no, this is horrible. I think this legislation is actually going to begin to bridge that divide and facilitate the recovery that's so important. And with this amendment, I'm happy to put my name on this bill and I'll sign the conference report. There's a one-letter amendment, but I think it actually listens to the concerns of the staff and nurses who have just felt so challenged, and the concerns of the hospitals and And part of this bill is related to things beyond this room, and that's the way compromises go. But I think as we implement this, I think it's going to be healthier. And it's just too bad it took so long, but at least now it's ripe. And I think as people look at the bill in total, like they're going to see a partnership, and where that is so important. And as Representative Feist and I were talking yesterday, and nice to meet you, and Senator, talking to Aaron and other and hospital people and more nurse people and all that, I was able to help synthesize. I hadn't even thought of what I'm saying now, but this is going to make it better. There's no catastrophe to come. And you can have a staffing committee as little as four people, you know. And if you're worried about the money, so, I mean, the money goes away. And now you have people working together, setting up what would make the most sense. And at the end, Madam Chair and members, the patients are going to benefit. And the money they're spending in the system is actually going to be, they can be confident that they're going to get the care that they need. And I'm really kind of, I guess I'm ready for my first speech, Madam Chair. So I'll let Mr. Monahan walk it through.
Mr. Monahan.
Madam Chair, members, on the A26, beginning on page 1, lines 3 through 11 are all related to clarifying the hospitals that would be exempt from the staffing requirements in the bill. Lines 12 through 14 are clarification regarding the composition of the nurse staffing committee, specifying that 50% are direct care workers, but then having the 35-15 split between RNs and other direct care staff be approximately those percentages. Line 15 is clarifying core staffing plan requirements. Lines 16 through page 2, line 11, are all related to changes to the mediation process and the trigger for arbitration. So in this language, when the members of the staffing committee can't reach an agreement, they can go to mediation. If a mediator determines that the members have reached an impasse, then they have the option to go to arbitration, but they can only do so if the mediator recommends it. And a similar change is made if the hospital management disagrees with the decision of the committee. And then there was some language beginning on page 1, line 24, regarding collecting data and reporting on that data with respect to the mediation process and how often the staffing committees end up using that process. On page 2, lines 12 and 13 are modifications regarding the public disclosure of waiting times in ERs, removing the requirement that the times be posted on a hospital website, but keeping the requirement that it be posted in the ER. Lines 14 through 20 are modifications to the nurse staffing report, including a requirement that in addition to elective surgeries being included on the report, urgent and emergent surgeries be included. and also requiring that when submitting this nurse staffing report, a hospital also report turnover rates among direct care registered nurses and other direct care healthcare workers, and the extent and frequency of a hospital's noncompliance with its core staffing plan. Page 2, line 21 through page 3, line 1, is moving some language that had been, and amending some language that had been in an uncodified section related to developing the grading system for hospitals. It moves into statute a requirement that the Commission of Health convene a stakeholder group to recommend a system for grading. Hospital nurse staffing provides for a date when those recommendations need to be provided to the legislature, and exempts this stakeholder group from various normally applicable requirements revolving groups of this sort. On page 3, line 2, it removes subdivision 2, which was all the grading factors that were in the original bill. The result, of course, is that the stakeholder group that the commissioner convenes will come up with the method for grading hospitals. Page 3, lines 4 and 5 modify the requirements related to public disclosure of the grades for the hospitals, just referring to whatever system the stakeholder group develops. Lines 6 through 14 is related to the retaliation language. It reorganizes some of the language that was in the A21. It adds language to when a nurse may refuse to take on additional patients and not be subject to retaliation. That's on lines 6 and 7. And lines 8 through 12 are clarifying that the Nurse Practices Act still applies in these situations, and then gives a bit of a description of what is in the Nurse Practices Act. So there's those lines on 9 through 12 aren't changing the law. They're just sort of description of what's in the law elsewhere in statute. And finally, lines 15 through the end are two additional stakeholder groups, or potentially up to two additional stakeholder groups. The Commissioner of Health will convene one to develop the toolkit for best practices for the implementation of the hospital's staffing committees, the other to examine whether there are objective metrics to verify that a hospital is adequately staffed, all in an effort to examine the feasibility of establishing an alternative compliance pathway. And also provides that these groups aren't subject to ordinarily applicable statutory requirements related to groups of this sort. And finally, on page 4, line 7, it removes the requirement that the Department of Health seek to establish through data analysis a causal link between adverse events and understaffing, and instead changes the requirement to look into correlations between adverse events and understaffing.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. Before we turn to Senator Abler, are there questions about this? Senator, excuse me, Representative Feist, man, I'm telling you what, it's this room.
Not a lot of sleep these days. I just wanted to thank Senator Abler. I think these amendments are really strong, and I really like the way that we've adjusted the mediation and arbitration to make it, you know, less likely, which I think is everyone's goal. Nobody wants arbitration under this, and I think it's a really elegant amendment, and I think it's a stronger bill, so thank you.
So, Madam Chair, thank you.
Senator Abler.
This is a product of a lot of input. And I think on this kind of matter, when people are afraid on both sides, then they, once they can relax, they're going to go like, oh, yeah. Anyway, so I think this is really what everybody wanted in the first place, this idea. So, Madam Chair, I have an oral amendment. And this is, we've adopted the base amendment, so now I can amend my amendment. So. And it has to do with the word grading, which I think is premature. There may well be grades that come out of the task force, but I think a good process of that will decide what the best way is. But we certainly want evaluation and reporting. And so, Madam Chair, if I could move on line 2.22 to delete grading and insert evaluating. On line 2.29, delete grading, insert evaluation, and 2.31, delete grading and insert evaluation, and I'm happy to hear comments about that, and when it's time, I can just incorporate that, but I wanted to get the committee's thought about that.
Is every members, are you clear about the oral amendment that Senator Abler is offering? And members, do you have questions or comments about the oral amendment?
All right. Well, Madam Chair, I'll just incorporate that then. Thank you. And thank you for it.
Thank you. Senator Abler incorporates changes to the A26 amendment on lines 2.22, 2.29, and 2.31, changing grading to evaluating in each case.
Actually, evaluate. What's the last two, Madam Chair, are evaluation.
Evaluation. Thank
yes.
you.
The All right. Shun of the value.
All right. Are there other Representative Feist has two oral amendments. And are these to the A26?
Yes. So I have two oral amendments. On page 1, line 15, we just noticed a typo. And it should read estimated whole, so we just need to add a D to the word estimate.
Representative Feist moves an oral amendment to...
Madam Chair, I can just incorporate that.
Very good. Senator Abler will incorporate the change on line 1.15, changing the word estimate to estimated. Sandy Feist.
No,
Representative
Sandy.
Feist.
Always wrong.
Yeah.
I have one more amendment which can be incorporated into the larger amendment, and that is just that we realized we did not put a date on line 2.1 for when this report should be provided. And so on line 2.1, after the word and, we would say comma, by July 1st, 2029, comma. And so the line will read after this amendment, the commissioner must analyze the data submitted under paragraph B and by July 1st, 2029, submit. And that
Madam
is the
Chair.
Amendment.
Senator Abler.
I think the date makes sense. I just wanted to technically ask Mr. Monahan if that's how he would write that or if it goes at the end. Or I don't care, but he's fine. I'll incorporate that. Madam Chair.
Senator Abler incorporates with Mr. Monahan's approval. Okay. Senator Abler incorporates on page 2, line 1, the addition of by July 1st, 2029. All right. Senator Abler then moves the A26 as amended. Seeing no questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. Senator Abler.
Madam Chair, I worked with Representative Feist to come up with two more amendments now to the A21.
We have before us now the amended A21. Senator Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on line 2.20, I would move to delete as written and approved by the Hospital Nurse Staffing Committee. And Madam Chair, the idea of this is that I understand some hospitals don't have a Hospital Nurse Staffing Committee, and so at least in the beginning and even going forward, you don't have to say that. But so we already included the word existing core staffing plan. So this would just mean that until you get a new one, the old one continues from whatever source, if it's part of collective bargaining or whatever. So I thought that would help. So that's my motion.
All right. Senator Abler, can you again say the page and line?
Madam Chair, line 2.20, pretty much delete everything after the word plan.
Is it page 20?
I see.
Yep. I know.
Short night, Madam Chair. So 20, yeah, sorry.
I'm struggling with names. You're struggling with numbers.
There's nothing on page 2 that would help this. So
all right.
Line 20.20.
All right.
My vision, Madam Chair, was not 2020 when I was looking.
Senator Abler moves an oral amendment to the amended A21, and that would be on page 20, line 20, after the word written, a period, and deleting.
After the word plan.
Okay.
I think that's even clearer.
Mr. Monahan? Okay. I just want to make sure that we are clear here.
So, Madam Chair and members, so that paragraph would then read on, starting on 20.19, during an ongoing dispute resolution process, a hospital must continue to implement the core staffing plan.
It's existing core staffing. That we added.
Yes, but existing was part of the A26. Yeah,
right.
So existing. Yeah, sorry.
Perfect.
All right. So this is a subject that Senator Abel and I have been talking about for a couple of days. So quite familiar to me. That's right. Senator Abler moves on page 20, line 20, an oral amendment. So it would read, during an ongoing dispute resolution process, a hospital must continue to implement the existing core staffing plan, period.
Perfect.
All right. Any questions on that? And all those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Abel.
I was maybe hoping we could say it like one more time, just so there would be, that is not necessary. May I just have one final oral amendment, Madam Chair?
Senator Abler.
Back to the grading thing, and so on line 25, page 25, line 18, it's the same discussion about grading. And I think in this case, the better word is report, and I talked to Representative Feist about it. So I would move to delete grade and insert the word report.
All right,
I'm happy to take input from Representative Feist.
Representative Feist.
Yeah, thank you. I think what we had discussed was at line 25.17, we could actually just delete the word grade, and so it would say public disclosure of compliance, and then on line 25.18, that's where we could replace grade with report.
Madam Chair, I like her amendment better. I'd like to offer that amendment.
Senator Abler moves an oral amendment on page 25.17, subdivision 3, would read public disclosure of compliance, period. And on line 25.18, commissioner must publish a compliance report. Are there any questions? All right. Senator Abler moves that oral amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say no. And that is
Madam
adopted.
Madam Chair, I have no more amendments.
Senator Abler has no more amendments. So for those of you, and I know there are a lot of people in this room who have done this work for a long time, this is, as I understand it, the Senator Abler method, and I appreciate it.
I think we have one more grade to change to report.
Senator Feist is going to offer one more oral amendment.
Continuing in the theme of the last oral amendment, on line 25.20, we missed one more reference to a grade, and so we can change grade on that line to report. And so line 25.20 will read, accessible and easily understandable explanation of what the compliance report means.
Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
I think it's a great amendment, but it's been kind of an interesting session. What'd you think? But I think the collaboration here is a model for how we should do it elsewhere. And taking a topic this rough and this pretty high tone bell, and with good people listening, working together, and even the last little amendment, like how nice. This is what people hope that Minnesota government looks like. And Madam Chair, I'm honored to be a part of that process and have you chair it and with the two co-chairs. And when this goes on, and this is my closing comments, but I think we have a product that I think is going to facilitate what everybody wished it could be. And the Hippocratic Oath, above all, do no harm. No one's going to be harmed by this, and every patient's going to benefit. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I support you, Madam.
Mr. Monahan. All right then, Mr. Monahan. So Representative Feist moves an oral amendment on page 25, line 20, changing the word grade to report. Any questions? Questions? Then that oral amendment is adopted. Mr. Monahan?
Madam Chair, at the final motion, I think there may be other examples of the word grade in the amendment. Could the final motion include an instruction for staff to make conforming changes with respect to that issue?
Yes, Mr. Monahan.
Thank you.
All right. So before we make a final motion and then give instruction, are there members that have other comments that they'd like to make about this proposal? Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. I want to start with just, again, a thank you to Senator Murphy and to Representative Feist for what I know has been a great deal of work on this bill. Many, many hours over many months, and certainly this bill has been around for years, but just this session I know has been a great deal of work, and I thank you for that, to get it to the point that it is now in, through difficult situations and high stakes, as was said. And so it's important, so thank you for your work. As a nurse of over 20 years and a senator from Rochester with major medical facilities in my district, I take my role very seriously to bring the voices of my constituents to this table and to this work on this really important and complex issue. I've been listening to the wide diversity of perspectives shared by people in my community, healthcare professionals, business leaders, concerned citizens, and today we are going to adopt significant concessions to bring this bill into a form that will placate many of the concerns of stakeholders that we have heard while still keeping a strong bill to get to the issue and the work that we are trying to do. So again, I take my role very seriously, and in all of the work here at the legislature, feel like it's important for me to bring the voices of the folks in my district to this work. So I want to take just a moment to share some of the stories and perspectives from my district about why this bill is so critically needed. Even at an institution often labeled as the best hospital in the world, and rightfully so, that's the cornerstone employer in my community, nurses are struggling. Patient safety and well-being is suffering. The status quo is unsustainable. For my time in nursing leadership and my own experiences at the bedside, I know firsthand that many nurses have long passed their breaking point. So I just want to share a few of those words. A constituent wrote to me, "I was in bedside care and changed my job due to unsafe staffing levels every shift. The patients are being neglected in varying degrees due to physical limitations. Nurses can only be in one place at a time. I would love to return to the bedside. It was my first choice for a reason, but I'm unwilling to do so under the conditions that currently exist. I will not risk my license, and I will not allow myself to feel like I could have done so much more for my patients at the end of every day." A pediatrics provider shared, Keeping nurses at the bedside act is needed. We consistently do not have enough nurses, even on the pediatric side. A recently retired physician's assistant wrote to me, "I know firsthand that the hospital I worked in does not always consider the needs of patients or the nurses in their staffing decisions. They defend those decisions by saying they cannot afford to staff for peaks. I understand the concept, but where exactly did the patients fit into that formula? There were times when I was working there when staffing levels became unsafe for patients. Those recovering post-ops can take a turn for the worse very suddenly, and if it isn't discovered in time because a nurse simply has too many patients to take care of, the results can be very adverse." A patient wrote to me, "Every time I'm at the clinic, which is often for cancer treatment, I ask my nurses about this. They all say the same thing. Management doesn't listen to us. We need relief. Please tell legislators to vote for the Nurses for the Bedside bill. So I'm asking on behalf of at least the 15 nurses I've had by my side, please pass this bill." And lastly, just yesterday, I got an email from a former coworker, someone who's in a different role now, who said, "I'm formally writing to you to ask that you continue the fight for nurses at the bedside and safe staffing. We need help. If our leadership is not going to help us, please pass this bill." So I'll stop there. The stories go on. When all our legislating is said and done this session, and we've completed our budgets and the work for the people of Minnesota, I myself will return back to the bedside, probably next week. And so this is very personal to me and very important to me, as it is for nurses across the state. And so I carry the perspective of both being that nurse at the bedside and being a family. Over the last year, my son has been in the hospital multiple times, most recently just last week. And I always chat with his nurses that are caring for him in the hospital, just from as a nurse to nurse. And, you know, I'm always interested in their experience and how they came to nursing. And so through those chats just last week, without fail, every one of his nurses talked to me about their concerns around staffing, unprompted by me. I did not raise the topic. It came up and they brought it to me. One nurse shared that she was the charge nurse and also, you know, was struggling to balance her patient assignment while being a charge nurse. Another nurse shared with me that they, on the small unit she was working on, they had had turnover about of a third of their staff over the last year. And the challenge that brings of having so many new staff and just the in and out and not having enough staff. So this is real and this is important, and the work to get this bill in a place where it's at now that both meets the need and the urgency of the issue before us and has made many compromises over the session, I'm very, very grateful for, because it will have a difference for nurses. But more importantly, this is a bill about nurses, but more than that, it's a bill about patients. At the core of this is about patients, to be sure that patients have the best care that they need and that they deserve, and that's what nurses want to do, is to provide the best care for patients. And so just to wrap up, as we are doing the work of the legislature this session, we are passing really important legislation that is not leaving people behind: paid family medical leave and making sure that all of our undocumented neighbors have the care that they need. This is right in line for that with me, that we are not leaving people behind. So after many, many years of nurses coming to the Capitol to say, "We need help, we need support," I am very grateful that this year we will not be leaving nurses behind. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. Are there others? Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we've been going through our work in the House, we often hear very aggressive questions of, have we talked to the experts, or are we just coming up with this legislation creatively on our own? And we know that in the labor movement, we do talk to the experts. That is who we go to directly, and that is who we center as we craft policy. And to have the nurses so vigilant over the course of these past few weeks has been what I hope is a reminder that that is how we go about centering workers and making sure that the best decisions are made with them in mind. And one thing that has been, I think, very beautiful and very true to the nature of nurses is every picket line I've joined you on is not about we need higher wages and to some degree better working decisions, but it's never been about you. It is about raising your voices and uplifting the struggles that you have to give your patients the very best care. And so I hope as we bring this legislation to the floor, each of our floors, that that is what we are centering when we talk and making sure that our colleagues understand that we have been talking to the experts, that this is about the patients, and that the nurses have never asked for anything other than the very best circumstances to care for their patients. So thank you for showing up. Thank you for teaching us. Thank you for standing strong. And we hope that we can do the best with our colleagues to make this happen. And finally, thank you to Sandra, who's worked so hard, and Senator Murphy, also working so hard, and for really putting your heart and soul in standing behind our workers and by extension, the patients. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Feist.
Thank you. I have lots of thoughts, but I think I'll just close with some thoughts about process. This is a really excellent bill. It's a really complicated bill. And I have had the privilege and honor to be, you know, having conversations all session. Most of the work that I do in the legislature is focused on public safety. I'm the vice chair of public safety, and so I've been focusing a lot on juvenile justice and mass incarceration. So this is outside of my typical area of legislating, and it has just been enlightening and really meaningful work. And I know that we haven't found a bill that everyone is, you know, we didn't find that quote unquote peace in the valley, but this is a really good bill. It's a really good compromise bill, and I want to thank the Minnesota Hospital Association for providing their wisdom to ensure that this bill is a practical, easily implementable bill and takes into account the concerns that they brought to me, and I appreciate that. So I'll just leave it at that. This bill is a really incredible bill. It's been a long time coming, and I'm excited to get it across the finish line.
There is no doubt the hours of effort that you've put into to try and find a meaningful compromise with the people who have very strong a very strong perspective and opposition to the proposal. So I give you a lot of praise and credit for that incredible work to try not to find peace in the valley as much as a meaningful compromise. And I think the people who are at this table and those who are participating in this have forged a meaningful compromise, and the elements most important in this bill: the loan forgiveness to make sure that we are continuing to bring people interested in the practice of nursing and the caring of patients are able to make that path. The necessary provisions around violence prevention, and we know that people who are working in our hospitals are experiencing more violence, and that's not just limited to the staff, but also to the people in our care. And that is something that we should absolutely not tolerate, and we are tending to that with this legislation. And last, the muscle in this legislation around staffing committees, mediation with an elegant solution around the necessary tool of arbitration, but keeping it at arm's length, if you will, and then the anti-retaliation pieces, which are necessary in this environment where there are so many pressures on healthcare right now, and some of them don't have anything to do with patient care, but more about the financial well-being and financial interests of a facility. And I think everybody who's working in healthcare now understands how difficult the provision of care can be when patient care is not always at the center of the work. And I think having strong nurses, strongly positioned direct care workers to make sure that nurses and those who are in the privileged position of caring for patients actually have the tools so they can do the job that they need to do under their license and they choose to do under our code of ethics. And to the issue of ethics, and then I'm going to move us through the last of this process, there has been a ugly, somewhat pernicious argument that has emerged around this legislation attached to a nurse's responsibility to refuse a patient assignment if that assignment puts a patient's health and safety at risk, which is our obligation under our license, one that we should take incredibly seriously, one that if we ignore, we can be disciplined, we could lose our license. A patient's safety and their care and a high quality of care is fundamental, not only to our licensure, but to our code of ethics. And that's something that I hold myself to when I think about my work here as a policymaker. This is an extension of my nursing practice and integrity and abiding by that code and remembering who's in my care is critically important. So there has been, for the last couple of weeks, an argument being made that nurses would choose to reject to care for somebody because of their own bias, which is, for me as a registered nurse, an offensive argument. But I also think it's important for us to say on the record that healthcare providers, nurses, physicians, pharmacists, all of us have our own bias, implicit or not. And I think that's an issue that needs to get lifted up more as we think about the disparities in healthcare. I've heard a lot in the last few days about people's stories of being rejected, whether it is rejected because they don't have the means to pay for their care, or rejected because their case is not emergent, or rejected because the clinic or the hospital doesn't care for that person. And we know there are a lot of people who are experiencing that rejection out of the system, or we hear about providers now choosing not to provide a prescription or participate in a procedure because of their own beliefs. And that is a tender area because a person's beliefs matter. But at least for me, I will say that my job to care for patients is devoid of my own personal beliefs, that the person in my care, that is the person. And those are the values that are attached. And so I think it is really important to lift this up, to recognize that there is implicit bias in healthcare providers. It may be, and I think it is probably time for us to tackle that issue more explicitly in healthcare. But to attach it to this proposal was troublesome to me. To try and fix it in this proposal was a difficulty. And so we have, addressed it by making sure that we're being very clear about the obligations that we have under our licensure. And for the balance of that discussion, please stay tuned. It's important. All right. Are there other questions before we move? All righty then. So I'll move to direct nonpartisan staff to prepare a conference committee report, and I also move that nonpartisan staff are empowered to make technical and conforming changes, including the word grading, to the language approved by this conference committee in order to reflect the intent of this conference committee. Other questions on the motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. And that motion is adopted. And further, I move the adoption of the draft conference committee report as described in the conference committee today. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed say no. And that motion is adopted. All right.
This draft conference committee report is adopted, and I want to thank, I really do want to thank everybody, both members, staff, partisan, nonpartisan staff, who have come willingly and with their brilliance to this work. And seeing no more business before this committee, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.